You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans. You're listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. To get this show every day, I need you to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Also, don't forget, when you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Mets. Unfortunately, the sports world has been brought to a screeching halt due to the outbreak of the coronavirus. I'm going to talk about that a little bit today, early on in the podcast, where that leaves the Mets as the season has been suspended as of now, and what that also means for this show. But I still have the remainder of my interview that I played on yesterday's show with Justin Toscano, so I'm going to play that throughout the show as well. We talk about the Mets pitching, Steven Matz, Michael Wacha, all that good stuff, and the camaraderie of this team. Before we get to any of that, though, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, check me out on Twitter, at FinkelsteinRyan. You can also find some of my writing about the Mets at MetsMerizeOnline.com. Anyway, getting to this coronavirus stuff. I am no doctor. I'm not going to get into what it is. If you're paying attention to the news, obviously you know what's going on. It is basically shutting down all public forums and events throughout the country. Different cities have different standards, limiting to 250 people in gatherings, whatever it is. The idea is it's an airborne virus, and they want to try to keep people as quarantined from each other as possible to stop the spread. And this was going to come to sports eventually. I think at one point, the idea and the plan was to try to continue with the games, just playing them without any fans. Try to quarantine each team in whatever fashion possible so that they do not come in contact with any virus and the games can go on and people can watch them through TV and listen through radio. Well, all it took was one player to basically end that for the entire country when it comes to sports. And Rudy Gobert of the Utah Jazz ended up getting the coronavirus, testing positive. Now his teammate Donovan Mitchell has tested positive for it as well. Those two players just happen to be Utah's All-Stars, and Donovan Mitchell just happens to be a major Mets fan. But that basically put an end to everything. Once these reports started to come out that they were sick, maybe had coronavirus, all of a sudden, that game that they were supposed to play last night was canceled, and the NBA quickly suspended their season. And now you're seeing the NHL, Major League Soccer, and now Major League Baseball following suit. So as of now, maybe this is 1 or 2 weeks, maybe it's longer than that. We really don't know. At some point, the remainder of the spring training schedule will probably take place to ramp up these players for the season, and then they will get into the regular season. Maybe it's a shortened season. Who knows? As far as this podcast, the Locked On Podcast Network is going to continue to bring you daily coverage of your favorite teams. I might be doing some different things. I still got to kind of wrap my head around what exactly the show is going to be. Maybe I'm going to go back in time and talk about some of the craziest stories that we've seen over the last 25 years. Who knows? But I'm going to keep trying to give you a podcast every day so you don't lose that. If this podcast has become a part of your daily routine, we want to stay with you during all of this. Anyway, with that being said, now let's get to the previously scheduled programming as I begin to play the conversation I had with Justin Toscano. The last big thing I want to talk about is, of course, the most talked about storyline in camp, which is that battle for a fifth spot in the rotation, or really the fourth and the fifth spot. When I look at Steven Matz, I don't see any viable argument to push him out of the rotation. He showed up to camp and pitched really well. He had the best numbers of the three last year. He's with the organization past this season. What would be the case to move Steven Matz out of the rotation?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think you brought up a good point before I answered that he did, you know, if you, people are looking at this as a competition, like just this spring, but I mean, if you think of human nature and the way coaches and the staff and front office is going to evaluate, I mean, the numbers last year should be important too, because the other guys are coming off of seasons, you know, that weren't good. And the Mets hope, you know, they have something in them, and it appears the way they're pitching this spring, they do. So that's a good point. But to answer your question, I think the case, if you were to say that Steven Matz should not be in the rotation, I think your case is that he's been too inconsistent over his career. He's never been a super dominant starter like the other two have. So, you know, give the other two a shot and see how it works. I think that's your case. But, and I mean, it's a tough thing to say, because coming into the spring, we all thought that Steven Matz was a shoe-in. And then, you know, I mean, the Mets, you know, without defining roles, it's kind of like, it seems like he's also in competition. But I think that would be your case. If you were going to say that Steven Matz should not make the rotation, you would have to base it on the fact that the other two have better track records and you think you can get something more out of them. But I mean, Steven Matz is still pretty, you know, he's still not like a young guy, but he's not old. He has never been awful in his career. I just think, especially pitching in the Mets rotation, his inconsistencies have been highlighted even more because he pitches after Jacob DeGrom and because he pitches after Noah Syndergaard. And last year, you know, Marcus Stroman, and because he's pitched around Zach Wheeler's good, you know, dominant, you know, half seasons that he had. So I think, and that's part of sports. I mean, you have to keep up and you have to compete, but but I think he's a better starter. I think he just doesn't get enough credit, as much as it stinks for him, because he's around so many good guys. I think he's a good pitcher. I just think that mentally they have to figure it out with him in terms of, you know, like trusting his stuff and trusting the work he's put in. And I think like he's got to slow down at some of those junctures where runners are on and there's important moments in the game, because he tends to blow up. And I think if he avoids that, you have a great starter in Steven Matz who'd get paid a lot of money.
Yeah. And you look, I mean, last year there was that one start against the Phillies where he gave up, I don't know, it was 7 or 10 runs without getting an out. And that really balloons his ERA. His ERA at home was great. Seems like Rick Porcello has kind of been handed that fourth spot. There was that story about matchups between Matz and Waka and juggling those two. So if Porcello is in the rotation, like has been speculated, and it comes down to Matz and Waka, where does Waka and the CAA-sized elephant in the room kind of factor in here?
Yeah, that's a big one, because, I mean, obviously, yeah, everybody knows the Brody connection to CAA, and you wouldn't think, you know, you'd have to, when you're thinking it out, would you think that Michael Waka would sign with the Mets at this juncture of his career to build value if he knew there was even a slight chance that he wouldn't start? I mean, because if there was no chance that he wouldn't start, and then this team goes out and signs Rick Porcello literally less than 24 hours after, that's acting in bad faith on the Mets' part if they told him one thing and did that. So you would have to think, I mean, it's kind of weird, because you would have to think that Waka would start, right? But there's that elephant in the room, but then it's like, then you would be pushing out Steven Matz. So I think, I don't know, it's tough. I think that's something that definitely should be considered. But if you're just like the casual onlooker, if you're not in the front office, you would think, well, like, hey, why does this guy deserve to be in the rotation more than Steven Matz, a homegrown player, one of the fan favorites? I mean, you know, guy who grew up in Long Island, was a Mets, you know, lifelong Mets fan. Like, and that, you know, no, that stuff doesn't count more than performance. But to kick a guy out of rotation, I mean, you would think there'd have to be something more to do so than Steven Matz has provided you reason to kick him out. But yeah, there's that CAA thing, and it's still, it still, you know, not even baffles me, but it still makes me wonder. It's like, what did they tell Michael? You know, he's been told, he was always told he was a starter, as was Porcello. So it's like, what was their plan all along? You know, it's like, what contingency, when they thought it up, what did they think was going to happen? They were going to be in this position. So it's, they must have had an idea of how it might play out. And I just don't know what that is, because it seems like the only logical way to make those two happy is to kick Matz out of the rotation. But if you look at his numbers and you look at his track record, I mean, unless they feel there's something detrimental with him, I mean, that would seem kind of rash.
Yeah, it's just been something for me that has been puzzling since the signing happened. You basically addressed the problem twice with adding a fifth starter, and it has never quite made sense. All right, I have two more quick questions for you before I get you out of here. The first one is Luis Rojas being the Mets manager. I think the last time I talked to you, it was after the Beltran hiring. Can you just speak to the overall camaraderie on this team, building off that strong half, and how Luis Rojas plays into that?
Yeah, I think I know teams, every team has, you know, the even, I mean, the worst teams at this point have optimism. But I think the Mets really do believe that their second half was more truer to themselves than the first half was. And I think, like, Luis Rojas, I mean, I haven't heard a bad word about him at camp this year, like, not even in talking to players, you know, off the record. I mean, everybody just loves him. Like, they love him. And I think it's that, it's almost that he's, you know, from the Dominican Republic, but it's that classic, as much as it sounds cheesy, that classic American dream story. Like, that's what he is. Like, he's a kid who, yes, his father, you know, he comes from the Alou family, and they are a huge baseball family, but he's a kid who still put in the work. He didn't get a major league coaching job until he was 37. And by then he'd managed 8 seasons in the minors for the Mets, and he had played minor league ball, and he had been around clubhouses since he were a kid. So in that case, he is like the American, you know, he's this baseball lifer who is still only 38 years old, and he's got all this experience and the Dominican Winter League managing experience. And I think guys really respect that. Like, they see that he paid his dues, because most of them, you know, not all those guys in that clubhouse are second rounders. Most of them had to pay their dues or come through injuries, or they were sitting on those same minor league buses with him eating ham sandwiches, as Steven Matz once said. And it's kind of, I think that has been a rallying point for them, is that they feel like they connect with this guy. Like, they know this guy. They knew what they were getting in Luis Rojas. And yes, they were excited about Beltran, but they knew what they were getting in Luis Rojas. And he's, you know, down to earth, very kind. And I think the camaraderie on this team is going to reflect that. I think that there's a feeling around the Mets that they're, in a sense, like, pissed off. They're optimistic that, you know, that second half was more who they were, but it, to them, they don't like that everybody has, you know, is always prematurely counting them out. And so I think, because everybody thinks like, oh, that, you know, that first half was more than, they just got lucky, they still missed the playoffs, I think for them, there's still a ton of motivation to take that next step. And I think if you look at the lineup and the starting pitching, potential for the bullpen to be there, I think they can.
Yeah, I think that's actually a great place to leave, because I think to hear that camaraderie, to hear the way everyone's rallying around Luis Rojas, I think there should be a lot of optimism for Mets fans going into this season. So once again, thank you for joining me, Justin. Let everyone know where they can find your work.
Yeah. At the NorthJersey.com, I'm in that Mets section, or on Twitter at Justin and then C Toscano, TOSCANO. And yeah, I'll be retweeting this podcast, so you can find me there too.
Awesome. So thank you for joining me, and enjoy some spring training baseball today.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Have a good one.
All right, that is all for today's edition of Locked On Mets. I want to give a big shout out and thanks to Justin Toscano. Follow him on Twitter at Justin C. Toscano. You can also follow his writing at NorthJersey.com, where he writes for The Record, covering all things New York Mets. Have a great weekend. Stay safe, everyone. Also, if you need
some other great baseball coverage. Don't forget, check out the Locked On MLB podcast, also appearing daily. Sully does a great job with that show. Just tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB.